And basically, the premise is the following. So as you know very well, if you take the Randall-Sundin model, it's a five-dimensional warp spacetime. And this graph shows the, it's a cartoon of the wave function of the graviton as a function of the extra dimension. And the graviton wave function is localized close to a region which is a cutoff version of the ABS-5 boundary. So basically, recently, there has been some investigation of the question whether you can have scenarios that instead of having a wave function like this, have a wave function which is peaked away from the what would be the region close to the ABS-5 boundary. So this is what I'm going to discuss. And the reason for investigating this question is basically holography. So as you know, the holographic correspondence states that a five-dimensional theory with gravity asymptotically ABS-5 spacetime, times eventually some compact factor that I will ignore throughout this talk, is equivalent to a four-dimensional field theory without gravity as a fundamental ingredient at least, so without, that doesn't contain gravity. And the spectra of the two theories coincide. So more precisely, what happens is that the excitations near the boundary of ABS correspond to high energy modes in the field theory, and the radial evolution of the coordinate, which I called y in the previous cartoon, correspond to RG flow, essentially, towards the infrared of the theory. The fact that the spectra of the two theories coincide can be made more precise in the following sense. So it means that the spectra of four-dimensional particles can be calculated, calculating the spectrum of normalizable state in the five-dimensional geometry. So now the question is, can we add four-dimensional gravity to the picture? So can we have a four-dimensional theory including gravity? And the answer is yes, because, for example, Randall-Sundin 2 has a holographic interpretation in this sense. So here, the bulk is not fully asymptotic ABS, it's just a slice of ABS, which is cut off before arriving to the boundary. And so that means in the dual language that the four-dimensional field theory is an ultraviolet cutoff. And you can show that there exists a normalizable four-dimensional massless spin 2 in the spectrum of the of states, so therefore this theory includes gravity, four-dimensional gravity. However, the graviton wave function, as I said before, is peaked in the UV, and this corresponds to the fact that the graviton is added on top of the CFT degrees of freedom, or the cutoff CFT degrees of freedom, as a fundamental ingredient. So the picture is a four-dimensional field theory with a UV cutoff, and gravity coupled to the theory at the cutoff. So the question is the following. Can we have 4D gravity which is localized far away from the boundary of ABS? This is interesting because this will correspond to a gravity which is sort of effective, an effective phenomenon, is an emergent phenomenon rather than fundamental. So this question has received some attention recently. So the outline of this talk will be the following. I'll just first describe the first attempts at this, which are essentially like Randall-Sundin models. And then I will move on to what we are doing, which is Einstein-Dilaton gravity in five dimensions. I will study the linear fluctuations around the backgrounds, and I will go hunting for the spin 2-0 modes. And then I will discuss one concrete example, if I have time, and I'll give some conclusions and perspectives. So basically, the idea is the following, made more precise. So if you consider asymptotically ABS-5 spacetime, a spacetime which close to y equals 0 has a metric that goes like this, it supports various fluctuations of various fields that live in the bulk, notably the metric, which is always there, plus eventually some extra bulk scalar fields. And the way we find normalizable modes, the way we find modes that correspond to four-dimensional particles is the following. So modes that correspond to four-dimensional particles of mass m squared are modes such that they have a well-defined four-dimensional eigenvalue for the four-dimensional Laplacian, and on top of that, they are normalizable with respect to the radial direction y. Normalizable means essentially that they have a finite four-dimensional kinetic term when you reduce, essentially, when you integrate out the, over the finite fifth dimension. So these are the modes that we are going to look for. And in this language, we are interested in 4D massless, so with this m squared equals 0, normalizable fluctuations of gravitons, which means the tensor part of the five-dimensional metric component along the mu-nu direction, along the space-time direction. So basically, this This is a statement of the problem. We want to study the fluctuations of the metric, and we want to find normalizable modes with zero mass of these components here.
You mean that they correspond to four-dimensional operators?
No, normalizable states correspond to actually states in the field theory. So the spectral state, so these are not the sources, right? So I want to calculate the spectrum of the low energy states for the field theory.
So Francesco, this is what I'm sort of confused about, because we know that the volume of space, mm-hmm. of the space, is fixed around where you localize the gravity. Because that's sort of the definition of gravity. In four-dimensional theory, if you have volume, finite volume space, that's wave function of the gravity.
Well, that's because you're thinking about a non-normalizable state, and then you put a cutoff, it becomes normalizable. That's what happens in relative
gravity. I'm thinking about normalizable state, because you are looking for a graph for effective four-dimensional gravity.
Yeah.
You have to have a normalizable state.
Yeah, absolutely.
So which means that now you're looking for a picture where you want to pick the whole volume around some IR grain. That's sort of
no, not necessarily. You will see. You don't necessarily have to do that. This is the fluctuation, this is not the full metric. I don't know, so in principle, this is a separate question on how the background metric looks like. So this is, I'm talking about the fluctuation, the wave function of the fluctuations.
So remind me, the radion is peaked around the IR.
For example, right? Yes. In the Randall syndrome, the radion is peaked around.
Problem with gravity.
The gravity usually.
Usually speaking, the UV, right?
I'm saying, well, we'll see what he's going to do, right?
So you can separate the question about the background space-time. So the space-time is not going to be ABS, basically. It's going to be ABS only in the UV, and then it's going to become something else. And you can ask, it's a fair question to ask where the fluctuations are localized in this space. So,
okay.
Stay tuned. Anyway, So basically, if you take a mode in five dimensions that solves the corresponding bulk equation, so you can expand it close to the boundary, and typically close to the boundary means close to y equals zero, and typically it has an expansion which looks like this. So there is a leading term and a subleading term with coefficients with power loss delta minus and delta plus, which are some numbers. And typically what happens is that the phi minus mode, the leading term, is not normalizable. So this is what we in ABS-CFT would call a source for the four-dimensional field theory. Whereas the other guy, the phi plus mode, is usually normalizable, at least in the UV. And this corresponds to an infrared modification of the theory. So in particular, for this tensor mode, there is, if you solve this equation, if you define h mu in some appropriate way, you find that there is a constant part, which doesn't depend on y, which is the leading term, and the subleading term goes to zero, like y to the 4. So in ABS, clearly, so if you take pure ABS, it turns out that the H0 mode, the leading part, is not normalizable, because when you compute its kinetic term, the kinetic term contains powers of the scale factor, which is this, and this is infinite, close to y equals zero. So unless you cut off the space, this mode is not a state in the CFT, but it is actually an external source which you add to the theorem. However, in Randall syndrome, where you take a slice of ABS and you can reparametrize the metric by adding a 1 here, now you integrate still from zero, so this mode now becomes normalizable. So in the dual language, this means that the source picked up a kinetic term, so it became a dynamical field rather than an external source. So this is for the H0 mode. However, a normalizable H4 mode, the one that is subleading, would correspond to a low energy excitation rather than a fundamental one. And so the question is, can we find a setup in which the only normalizable mode is this H4, so it's the subleading one, so in which the zero mode, the Randall syndrome zero mode, is not normalizable, but there is a normalizable solution corresponding to the subleading part. So now, clearly, if you take an asymptotically ABS spacetime without cutting off the boundary, the Randall syndrome mode will become non-normalizable because of what I just said. So the question is whether you can find another normalizable solution to the graviton field equation. So The first attempt at this was by last year by Gabrietta, Peloso and Poppitz. So what they did is basically they considered Randall syndrome one model, so the one with two brains. So they took pure gravity in with a negative cosmological constant in a slice of ADS, which is cut off both in the UV, there's this one here, and in the infrared. So there is this infrared cut off by one. So here H, again, is the fluctuation of this mode. And they added some terms to it. They added the Pauli Fields mass term in the bulk for these fluctuations. So they did the analysis of the at the linear level, so it's just a quadratic action. So they added this Pauli Fields mass term, and also they added some boundary mass term. So you have an extra piece in the bulk and two extra contributions at each grain with some arbitrary coefficients for now, lambda, alpha 0, and alpha 1. So if you write down the field equation for this guy, then you find something like this. So this is the extra piece that they added, and this is the boundary conditions, which depends on these alpha parameters. And what they found is that if you choose the, if you tune the alphas and the lambda in such a way that they satisfy this relationship, then you do find a massless solution of this thing. So there is a solution which satisfies, for which this term vanishes, and the profile looks something like this. So you notice that it grows with y because alpha 0 is a positive number. So therefore, this is an example of a four-dimensional graviton which is peaked around the infrared ray. So clearly here, you have to do something to the theory. You have to add mass terms everywhere. So this is a non-trivial modification of the theory. So again, it's in the dual picture, this is interpreted as a low energy effect.
Is it a really strict tuning of the coupling? So
yeah.
If I just slightly detune it.
Well, if you detune, you have a mixture. You have a mixture of this guy and the Randall syndrome mode. So basically, in this picture, your space time is finite. So both modes are non-analyzable. And therefore, to pick up only one of them, you have to tune. There is no way.
But this is at the full non-linear level?
No, this is linearized level.
But it may not be consistent.
In fact, yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm going to... So that's why this is not satisfactory. Yeah. So this is my next... So the feature of this model is that... So you do get infrared massless gravitons, and they show, they claim that there are no extra massless vectors or scalars. So apparently this thing seems to be okay. Because, of course, you have to worry about the other components of the metric, the ones that have index in the five dimension. You don't want extra light massless particles going around. However, as you said, general covariance is explicitly broken by the mass term. So essentially, you cannot. It's unclear to include the higher order terms in this theory. So basically, you have the usual problems of massive gravity in five dimensions. So it means you be completely you need covariantization, essentially, and that's not... necessarily consistent. And also there is a problem in the scalar sector. So when I said that there are no extra scalar modes, what they found is the following. There is one mode which has which is there, which is normalizable. However, it has vanishing kinetic term at the quadratic level. So from the quadratic action, it disappeared completely. This guy would be a gauge mode in Einstein's theory. However, in massive gravity, it's not a gauge mode. And so the problem is that in general, covariant theory, this mode would decouple to all orders. However, here, if you start including nonlinear interaction, it probably would recouple. And since it has a zero kinetic term, it would get strongly coupled essentially immediately. So this is it's unclear that this framework is actually consistent. So what we did was try to remedy this problem by keeping some of the good features. So what we did was instead of modifying the theory by putting mass terms, we modified the background geometry in a generic covariant way, adding a bulk scalar field. So what we consider is the following theory, so just Einstein-Dirac connection in five dimensions. Background solutions, we take something which is essentially conformally flat, and where the scale factor depends only on the extra coordinate, and the scalar field also depends only on the extra coordinate. And we consider solutions which are asymptotically ADS-5. So the metric goes to 1 over ky, where k is the ADS curvature scale, for small y. So and don't, we don't put any UV cutoff. So we extend the space all the way to the AES boundary. So towards this y equals zero, the dilaton goes to a constant, and the potential goes to what would be the cosmological constant in the pure AES case. So this is a theory that looks like AES at close to y equals zero, and then it becomes something else.
It usually ends on a singularity.
Yeah, so exactly. So that's the problem that I'm going to have. So I'm going to discuss spaces which may have singularity, that actually have singularity. So at some point, one has to deal with that. And I will have some suggestion on how to. But
can you get this action from some gauge supergravity truncation?
Yeah. I mean, this is the typically. But okay, usually in gauge supergravity, you have a bunch of scalars. So here you turn on.
The one I'm going to use is some concrete.
No. So it's going to be a concrete. I'm going to give a concrete example, however, it doesn't come probably from any gauge supergravity. So this potential, I'm going to choose in such a way that that. For my purposes, that's
the features that you want, will they survive if you were doing it sort of in a real model with gauge supergravity?
You probably have to do something more complicated. So there are some regions of space in which the potential might look like what you get from gauge supergravity, typically like some exponential potential. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure. I don't know the answer to this question. I cannot think of any.
So this is some sort of terminological.
Yeah, this is phenomenological process, like bottom up or yeah.
Mm-hmm. So where will you have singularities?
No, you don't necessarily have to have a singularity.
But
however,
in your explicit model, when you localize graviton in a ball, singularities.
Yeah.
Where will they be?
It would be in the infrared. Yeah. No, the asymptotical AES part would be.
And you will be able to basically decouple the region where the graviton is localized versus the singularity or not?
Not really. Okay. In some sense, the answer is yes. So what will happen is that in this sense, the answer is yes. So the what I will have is the fluctuations. Do not blow up at the singularity. So at least my perturbation theory of this theory, expansion and fluctuation, will be consistent. Then you can ask other questions, and then the answer is, now typically what I would say depends on what you put at the singularity. So I mean, this is an attempt, and it needs to be improved, of course, but okay.
Usually the singularities, you have to have infinite negative tension brains located on them and tightly correlated sources for the scalar field, otherwise the solutions. You know this activity on sort of self tuning brains that was wrong, right, essentially, and people just showed that the singularities is a big problem. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, singularity usually is how the theory tells you that you are doing something wrong. That's the response, right?
You're
forcing you to do something that, you know,
it's a generic feature. Even if you have a real supergravity model coming from string theory, if you find a singular solution, then you have to be very, very cautious.
Yeah, no, so I will not say that. But okay, but there are also examples in which the singularity signals that there is some infrared physics going on, like.
That's why I asked you the question. That's why the question that I asked is very important. So you can wiggle yourself out of that as long as you can show that there is a parameter range in which you can put there is a separation between the infrared singularity and the physics where you localize your graviton. If you are going to say that you don't have this parameter that would separate it, then, you know, it's a problem.
Yeah, in fact, you mean it's a. Yeah. Okay.
So for this one, here's the physical way, which I'm sort of, I don't know, at least for me, this indicates something. So let's say you give me some background, mm-hmm. and you localize gravity somewhere, okay? I don't care whether there is some place, let's say you call it IR brain.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's say I'm an observer on the IR brain.
Mm-hmm.
There is a zero mode graviton localized on graviton.
Mm-hmm.
Now let me take a stone and throw it out. Okay. No, really.
Yeah.
The point is that the graviton couples universally, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's from that we know by general covariance.
Mm-hmm.
So the only resolution of this part, why this stone should be picked up. On the other hand, you are throwing stone away from where graviton is localized, right?
Mm-hmm. So you're throwing stone in the bank.
Yeah, I'm throwing stone in the bank, right? So the stone has to be cut off, right? Because obviously, right, the tail goes down, so the coupling to a stone should be there. Now, on the other hand, this is impossible because the zero moment gravity should couple universally, right? So we know what the resolution is. The resolution is that the mass of the stone redshifts away, right? That's what happens in Arnold's assumption. If you have a UV brain, you throw a stone away. It's a redshift because you are throwing stone toward IR. But this tells you that whenever you are throwing stone away from the place where graviton is localized, it has to redshift away. But then in which sense this brain is IR brain?
But
then it tells you that sort of by default, whenever you localize graviton, it should be some kind of UV brain. Right? And this singularity that you are discovering is maybe simply a response to that, that somehow the theory doesn't want to be, I mean, unless there is a singularity.
But, well, what I want to discuss is, so the stuff where matter lives is not close to the place where the gravity
is. No, let me take a test stone, right? Like, I take a test stone.
Yes.
What I will see, if I throw a test stone away from the place where gravity is localized, it has to redshift away.
Okay.
But redshifting means that something goes to IR, right? That's the redshift. It becomes lighter, right? Effectively, the stone becomes lighter. So this tells you that this place cannot be IR place. That has to be some UV place. At least for somebody. Maybe for some other modes, it is like an IR. Any chunk of matter that gravitates should redshift away from that place. Right. Otherwise, I don't see how you reconcile
it. So, I see your point.
This is an example of the optimist. It's not a skeptic. I'm not skeptical. I just want
to.
I'm sure what people discover will prove this point. That you will encounter a singularity.
So when I'm going to talk about singularity, don't think that this is going to be the end of the story. So there is some, you know, we thought about how to cure this singularity, and so there are some ideas around. However, they're good in this talk, but they didn't reach a conclusive stage. So anyway, so I know that this is a big problem. So anyway. So just to see how to, you know, treat this theory in a concrete way, basically one can, it's useful to reparameterize the metric in this form, so putting changing coordinates so that the extra coordinate has one in front, and defining this function b as basically log of the scale factor. So what happens is that if you write now the background field equation for this theory, they take a very simple form. So the kinetic energy of the dilaton is just second derivative of this function b. And this tells you that what you can do is you can choose an arbitrary function b such that this phi dot is not zero. If you do that, you can invert this relation and find the coordinate r as a function of phi naught. And then you find that the potential, you can rewrite the potential as a function essentially of this function b. So the potential, this equation takes now this form, and this function w is related to the function b that I chose arbitrarily. So basically, this tells you the following thing, that you can parameterize both models by the scale factor alone, so without having to start from the potential and then solving Einstein's equation. So you can start actually from the solution already and see what that does.
You basically go backwards. You come up with a geometry that you want, and then you ask.
Exactly. What is the potential
that
absolutely
you desire?
Yeah. So this is almost, you can do it almost arbitrarily. The only thing you have to keep in mind is that this function b double dot, which is the kinetic term of the kinetic energy of the dilaton, has to be positive. So whatever function such that has positive second derivative in this coordinate, or meaning that this combination here in the y coordinate is monotonically increasing, is fine for my, so it gives you a consistent.
That's at the classical level. If
this is at the classical
level. Including some Casimir line for your sources, then this is not necessarily
true. Well, one has to check that the potential you get doesn't give you a Kiano clause, for example. So this is what you mean? Or?
Well, this monotonic behavior of the scale factor, right, which tells you that if you start it this way, you have the singularity, and the absence of the upturn is related to the the energy conditions.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, it's right.
Impose on the stress energy things.
Yeah.
And if you have, say, Casimir energy in the bulk, then it changes things. Or if you have ghosts in the bulk, it also changes
things. Yeah,
you can have an upturn.
Actually, it's a very dangerous route to go, because the way you go, once you go this way, then typically you are excluded by any sort of semi-realistic model in supergravity. There's a potential satisfy, actually, in most cases, it's very difficult to break the strong energy condition. Well, this is to a large extent related to what Maxime was
saying. No, but this is the same condition, for example, when you find when you do fake flows of ABS CFT, this is exactly the same thing. So, I don't understand.
No, different. In ABS, we know exactly what the potential is, and you are backwards engineer, right?
So I'm backwards, yeah. So.
So you have to worry whether will you so once you choose your geometry, will you compute the stress energy and see whether it satisfies the at least the null energy?
But you mean the background stress tensor?
Yeah. Will you do that?
No, I didn't do that. But so you're saying it's not?
It's obviously not automatic. In fact, you know, you can.
No, but the strong energy condition. So. What do you mean, ABS? You don't have a strong energy condition.
Well, this is related to lots of things, whether you will have a pulsology, like superluminal signal propagation and things like that. So once you do this, that's a reasonable phenomenological assumption. But then you have to ask, so I'm basically cooking up how my matter interacts. And then you have to check whether the matter interacts in a reasonable way. And the minimalistic way to check that would be to compute the stress energy tensor and see whether it satisfies the energy.
Okay, yeah. We didn't check that. Okay, but. Yeah.
But that's the type of thing that, in particular, there are lots of phenomenological models which violate some of the conditions and you get something desirable. Mm-hmm. It's actually very difficult to implement in microscopic model. Okay.
All right, so.
You mean the stress, you want the stress energy of the diagram or the matter? Matter is fine, you just said, I'm thinking just how
yeah.
Well, I think.
What's the problem? The diagram is singular, so I mean, what's
okay.
The. Yeah.
What
do you want?
Well, we haven't seen the singularity yet, maybe it's not.
Yeah, okay. So. So, okay, so what I will do is I will look for now normalizable fluctuation around this background. And so what you normally do is you classify these fluctuations according to the four-dimensional Lorentz group. So essentially, you split the metric in this form. So you have 15 components in the metric, and then you have another one in the fluctuation of the Dirac, so you have a total of 16. However, not all of these components are physical. Basically, because you have linearized the diffeomorphisms in the bulk, so you have five of them. You can take away 5 degrees of freedom by gauge transformations in the bulk, and you can take another 5 away by using the constraints of Einstein's equation, and therefore you have a total. You're left with a total of 6 degrees of freedom in this theorem. So these are physical degrees of freedom. The next thing you do is you decompose fluctuations into mass eigenmodes, as I said before. And now, on top of the previous classification, you want to classify these fluctuations in terms of the irreducible representation of the Lorentz group. So you have to distinguish the masses from the massive case. So in particular, this is important for the scalar sector. So this is basically one point that the previous people that did this kind of study, they don't reanalyze, so that's why their scalar sector analysis, I don't think it's completely reliable. Anyway, so I will take this into account. So, for example, in the massive case, you can split further the metric in this form. So, where this guy is a transverse vector, this guy is a transverse traceless tensor, and then you have extra scalars, which I call psi n. And now you can choose, for example, a longitudinal gauge where there is no, you see this E term, I can put it to zero, and also this A mu, I can put it to zero. And so basically you're left with this physical degree of freedom, with these degrees of freedom. And then you write down the linearized Einstein equation. So the constraint tells you that this phi and this psi are related, and then this v nu, which appears here, is zero. And the remaining Einstein equation is basically the field equation for the tensor part, and the field equation for one combination of the two remaining scalar field, which is defined here. So basically, you have to worry about these two nodes. And so these, in terms of physical degrees of freedom, this agrees with the counting that I was telling you about. So this is, there are five spin 2 degrees of freedom in encoding this massive tensor, and one spin 0 degree of freedom of this field zeta. So in the massless case, you have the same, you have a slightly different decomposition, which I'm not going to write here, because now you have to decompose the things in terms of the light-like basis of momentum. But basically, the end of the short story is that you can choose what you would call Coulomb gauge in 4 dimension, or in which the essentially this tensor here and this vector are not only traceless and transverse, but also they are transverse with respect to the space directions. So now again, you can write down the field equation. So the constraint that you had before between phi and psi remains the same, and you also find a so there should be some parentheses here. So this should so you find a field equation for the a new field. So this is a cube a all everything prime equal to zero. And on top of that, you find the equation for this graviton mode, which is just the massless version of the equation in the previous slide. And now, instead of having a second order equation for this, for one scalar mode, you have 2 first order equations for 2 combinations of the of the 2 scalars. So again, you have a total of 6 degrees of freedom, but now they're split into 2 helicity plus minus 2, 2 helicity plus minus 1, which is the vector, and 2 helicity 0. So again, you have 6 physical components. So now let's look at what means for the spin 2 to be normalizable. So basically now I'm going to take this equation here, and I'm going to turn it into, this is standard, I'm going to turn it into a Schrödinger equation by defining a wave function psi, big psi, by first splitting the h mu nu in terms of the profile and the 4-dimensional part, which doesn't depend on y, and then you do a rescaling essentially by the scale factor. And if you do that, you find that the equation turns into a Schrödinger equation with this potential. So given a scale factor v, you can compute v immediately. And now if you look at the 4-dimensional kinetic term for the 4-dimensional, which is going to be the physical graviton, 4-dimensional part, this contains powers of the scale factor, and encoded into this e to the 2b. So if you use this relation, what you get is you get a 4-dimensional kinetic term times the scale factor. So that means that in this framework, the normalizability condition just means the usual quantum mechanical square integrability condition of this wave function psi. So I can just treat this problem in the usual way as in Schrödinger quantum mechanics. So now let's consider the zero mass case. So basically, I want to study the eigenvalues with zero energy of this thing. And what happens is that this you can integrate immediately. So there are 2 explicit solutions, which are you can parameterize this way. And now the question is whether they are normalizable or not. So we consider, if you consider asymptotically the SPI spacetime, where this b of y goes like 3/2 of log y, then you find that close to y equals zero, then you find immediately that this that I call psi uv is not normalizable, because it goes y to the minus 3/2 goes to y equals zero. So that one, and that's in fact what the one that corresponds to the Randall-Sundrum mode. So if you go all the way to the AVS5 boundary, this guy is not a physical, is projected out of the spectrum. However, the other guy goes to zero at y equals zero, so this one is in fact normalizable in the UV. So in fact, of course, both are normalizable in Randall-Sundrum when you put a cutoff, so you never reach the y equals zero. So So now the question is, we have a candidate zero mode, which is the one that is normalizable in the UV, and the question is whether it's normalizable at large Y. So either it's either it's normalizable or it is not. So if it is normalizable, then we have found this infrared massless gravity. Notice that here I'm fixing the lower end of the integration because I don't want this to contain any component of the guy that is not normalizable. So this you cannot change. So basically, this question depends on what happens to B of Y in the large Y limit. So in the dual language, this means that the presence or not of this mode depends on the infrared physics of the dual limit. So basically, there are two cases that you can consider. So either the Y range extends to plus infinity, so goes on forever, or the space-time ends at some point by zero, where you can choose to put where you can have a singularity, or you can also put a boundary. So you don't have necessarily to have a singularity. In fact, you can put a something which is analogous to the Randall sample of infrared brain, and it's analogous to what the were doing. So one thing that tells you right away that this is not an easy problem is that if the Y range extends to infinity, so if there are no singularities or boundaries, so if the infrared physics is just, there is no end of the space-time, then if you look at this function, then it always goes to infinity, is why it goes to infinity, so it's not normalizable. So you can just, you can see it from its immediate. So therefore, in the case where there is no end of the fifth dimension, there is no normalizable massless mode. So this rules out every kind of soft wall kind of model in which the scale factor, in which the potential, the Schrödinger potential in the previous slide goes up at Y going to infinity, but the space actually does not end. So you cannot achieve, you cannot get anything that way. In terms
are
of
there any explicit solutions of that kind known for some specific potentials?
Starting from the potential.
I'm not even sure there's an option. It might be that it always ends on the singular.
If you have a Newtonian system having a geodesically complete space, and in the models that he presented, just a gravity plus a dilaton field, that's only what can happen. Why it ends to plus infinity?
What kind of potential?
Well,
you can do. I know that in the absence of a potential, pure cosmological.
No, you will get potential. You will get that.
I was just curious if you.
Yeah, know, no, I don't know.
Well, you can put out 5 pgh supergravity, and there are some non trivial potentials, including cinches and cautions. And then what happens is that just go in his parameterization, which is going to pass in Y4.
I mean, it will happen in, in Randall Sandler, you go to infinity, in IBS, you go to infinity, you go towards the horizon, but there the potential does not turn up, the graviton potential. It goes like 1 over Y squared. That's infinity.
Yes. So this affects always in the case in 5 dimensions. So potentially, it might be a little bit simpler, always in positive. And the reason for that is that in high dimensions, you get the geodesically complete space by having an extra cycle, complex cycle stream in a non-singular way. But if you do Kaluza Klein reductions, then the 5-dimensional description is singular, it's a high dimensional. It's not necessarily singular.
Okay, so basically, the other option is that the space ends. And so for example, so again, this is an example with a singularity in which the scale factor goes to diverges logarithmically at some finite value by zero. So this means that the scale factor goes to zero and or zero to infinity at this level. So this I haven't said anything but the sign of alpha. But I will say now that alpha must be positive because of the previous constraint on the scale factor. The scale factor second derivative in the R coordinates must be positive. And So in this case, you can compute this function close to y equals 0, and you find a behavior like that asymptotically. And therefore, you can see that this is normalizable if alpha takes this value between 0 and 3 halves. So in this case, you do have something which is normalizable. And depending on the value of alpha, this wave function can either blow up at the singularity but being normalizable, but it also can go to 0 at the singularity. So in particular, if alpha is less than a half, both these components will go to 0 at y 0 equals 0. So you may think that, so in fact, this wave function is not peaked at the singularity, but it's peaked a little bit before the singularity. However, this might be a tentative answer to your question. However, these things are not so simple because of something that I will say in a moment. So instead, if there is a boundary, so of course this mode is normalizable because there is nothing that goes to infinity at the infrared. However, you need to impose boundary condition to have the zero mode in the spectrum. Also, there might be vector and scalar zero mode, while I don't have time to show it, but turns out that in a singular case, you can show that there are no scalar zero modes. And also, the thing about this putting a boundary there is that from the holographic point of view, if you put a boundary at some point, the infrared arises suddenly. So there is no... So the location of the boundary is independent of the physics in the UV, whereas with the singularity or with something that looks like a singularity, you can, for example, predict the position of this singularity essentially by giving the initial condition at the UV boundary. So you give the initial condition essentially on the dilaton and on the scale factor, and this will tell you where the singularity is, where there is no such thing with the boundary. So the boundary location is independent of the UV data in this language. So that's why, from a philosophical point of view, this singularity seems more interesting in some sense. But okay, also involves some problems. So the singularity, again, is a consequence of the dynamics. So you start with some definite potential, you start with an initial condition in the UV for the fields, and that will blow up at some point, which you can predict by just UV data. So again, the infrared behavior is already encoded in the fundamental ultraviolet theory in this case. So the problem is that things are not really independent. Even if the wave function goes to zero at the singularity, there is some extra information that you have to input at the singularity in order to get the zero mode. So basically, also with the singularity, you still need boundary condition. And the reason is the following. So if you consider the Schrödinger equation again with a generic mass parameter m squared, so basically what you find with this kind of, again, b, which is logarithmic, you find that asymptotically close to y0, the potential is quadratic in this way. So it's the inverse square law. And therefore, the two solutions asymptotically behave like this. And precisely in this range of parameter that I was talking about, there is both solutions are normalizable. So that's basically the reason why we could find a zero mode in this case. But then that also means that the spectral problem of this operator is not well defined, because essentially you can find a solution for any m square if you don't specify anything about this asymptotic behavior. So it's like doing a calculating the eigenvalues of the Laplacian on an interval without specifying boundary condition, you can get whatever spectrum you want. So in order to define the problem completely, you still have to define boundary conditions at the singularity, and these are encoded in the ratio between these two coefficients. So once you specify, you restrict yourself to functions which have a fixed ratio for this C1 and C2, then you get a well-defined problem, you get a discrete spectrum in particular. So there is a special value of R0 for which the zero mode exists, and for all the variables, the spectrum will not contain a zero mode. So the fact that the wave function is peaked not at the singularity but in some intermediate region doesn't save the day in terms of physics being independent of what happens with the singularity. So.
So in other words, the presence of the singularity is crucial for you to have
To be able to choose which solution I have to pick up and to make sure that I have a zero here. So you can relax. So okay, I will tell you maybe later what I can relax about this to get something which might be more sensible anyway. So basically this is a table of what happens for always for this paradigmatic logarithmic behavior. So I'm going to, if you consider this range of alpha that I was talking about, of course you can put different kinds of singularities. And when you find a normalizable zero mode, you're going to run into the same problem of having to specify boundary conditions. So I take this example. This is not generic, but it's this is a specific example, but it's basically the behavior is pretty generic. So basically, for example, you find so the circle means that the mode is present in the spectrum, where the bar, the dash means that it's not. So in all these cases, for alpha going from 0 to 1/2 to 3/2, you do find spin 2/0 mode. Spin 1/0 mode you find only if alpha is less than 1/2. However, there are no scalar 0 modes. So basically, you can show that in this case, all the scalar modes at the mass 0 level, at the 0 mass level, become non-normalizable. So those, at least, you don't have to worry about in this kind of model. And okay, this shows the behavior of the various other quantities in the at the singularity. So, okay. So a concrete example of this can be, for example, you take a scale factor, which is the simplest thing you can imagine, which has its two properties. So it has an asymptotically ADS region when y goes to zero, and a singularity with y equals y zero. So this corresponds to a metric which looks like this, conformally flat metric, which goes to ADS when y is small, and then shrinks to zero. So the whole space then shrinks to zero when y goes to y zero, with some positive power here. So the normalizable zero mode in this case looks like this. So there are some dimensionful quantities, which depends on the two scales. So there are two scales in the problem, basically the ADS curvature and the location of the singularity in ADS units, if you want. So this is the wave function. And the wave function profile depends on this dimensionless function f, which explicitly is given by this thing. And so it's just some function of z, which has the properties that I was saying before. So what are the boundary conditions I have to impose on the singularity? Here I can calculate explicitly because basically I can explicitly compute this f. So the asymptotic behavior of this f, again, goes to zero at z equals zero. Z is the dimensionless ratio of y over y zero. So it goes to zero there, and close to z equal 1 goes to this combination, where now c1 and c2 are some numbers that you can compute. In fact, you find that in this case, you have this ratio c1 is equal to this thing times c2. So therefore, a posteriori, those are the boundary conditions that we have to impose in order to get a zero mode. So of course, there is no a priori way of determining this singularity, so this is completely put by hand. But OK, so this is an example in which you find this guy in the spectrum, the zero mode. So there is one thing which I want to stress, so this may seem like fine-tuning of this boundary condition. However, the situation is likely better. So they are tuned, but there is some kind of... So this is not so bad. And the reason is the following. So if you take this massless ratio, the specific ratio that gives you a massless graviton. So there are at most 4 degrees of freedom in the spectrum because you have one massless spin 2, sometimes it was one massless spin 1, but never you get scalar. So basically, there is always at most 4 degrees of freedom in the story. However, if you detune now, suppose you detune this boundary condition by some small parameter epsilon, what you find is that if you do some perturbative analysis around epsilon equals 0, you find that the lowest mode acquires a small mass, which scales like epsilon. But therefore, in this case, you have 6 degrees of freedom, as I showed some time ago, because you have a full mass 6 spin 2 tensor, which is 5 polarization, and one scalar, which is zeta, which turns out also to be, there is a normalizable scalar mode for some appropriate parameter mass.
Can you clarify a little bit what do you mean by, so now once you detune the boundary condition, mm-hmm. how do you compute the mass?
So you solve the Schrödinger equation, and you can do a perturbation, basically you do it in perturbation theory on the boundary, in the boundary condition instead of the in the potential. So you use the same technique.
Boundary condition now. So I thought that you need that boundary condition.
So you need this to get a max, a zero max thing.
Oh, okay. So
right. Now suppose you modify that. Yeah.
So then you will still get a state in the spectrum.
Yeah, but it's not going to be masters. Yeah, and so there can happen two things. Either this mode just disappear and you get some state with finite mass, or you get another state with small mass. So this is what happens. A bunch of states with small mass.
So the statement is by any ratio of C1 and C2, there will be a mass.
There will be a mode, yeah.
Generically,
yes. So, but now, so you can see that there is a jump in the number of degrees of freedom when this parameter goes from tuned to slightly detuned. So there are 2 degrees of freedom missing to lift this guy, this master's guy, to a massive guy. So at least in this sense, this boundary conditions are stable. So there are not enough modes if you want to give the gravitons a mass. So basically, this is the same argument for which setting the Pauli-Thiers mass to zero in a 4-dimension is not tuning. Okay, there are symmetries that protect you, but you can also view it in terms of counting of the degrees of freedom. You have 5 propagating degrees of freedom in 4-dimension with a master, and you have only 2 without a master. So in this sense, this is like saying that the epsilon going to zero limit of this theory is not a continuous limit. So there is a special point in the parameter space, which is where this master's graviton is. And in fact, that's where you have enhanced symmetry, because you regain, at least at the linearized level, you regain 4-dimensional covariance in the theory. So now one can ask, okay, where do we live in this picture? So I would assume that the standard model fields live on a probe grain at some intermediate position, which is between the ADS boundary and the singularity or whatever, or the infrared boundary. So I call this position YB. And now to compute what is observed gravity on this probe grain, you just add a source term, a 4-dimensional stress tensor, which is localized on the brain, and you couple it, for example, canonically to the induced metric. So this is the action, the bulk part of the action plus the coupling to matter. So now you use the fact that this wave function, you know the profile of this wave function essentially, this h mu yx is something like this. And then you rewrite everything in terms of 4-dimensional mode, so you get a prefactor in the kinetic term, and you have this amplitude here in the coupling. So this gives you the basically, the Planck scale is just a ratio, the square root of G Newton is just a ratio between this by the square root of this. So this is all standard. So there are some dimensionful quantities times this dimensionless function of the position of the brain. And notice that this prefactor is essentially what you get in Randall syndrome 2. So it's basically a convolution of the Randall syndrome 2 and some profile. So, for example, if you take alpha equals to 1/4, then you get G Newton that goes like this. So that is, it goes to zero towards the UV boundary. It also goes to zero down here. So here is the singularity. So this is what happens. And so in particular, it goes to zero like this way, close to the singularity. And if you take alpha greater than 1/2, so for example, you take this value, then the 4-dimensional Newton's constant blows up towards the singularity. So this is again, but this alpha greater than 1/2 case is not really so interesting, because the perturbation theory clearly breaks down in this case. However, in the previous case, it does not. In fact, so the fact that Newton's constant goes to zero close to the singularity, so this might answer part of your question, because so if you throw a stone in this direction, eventually as it falls into the singularity, it will also redshift. I mean, it will also decouple from gravity in some sense.
Yeah, but that's why. So then this is like really, really handsome singularity.
Really what?
it really is based on singularity, this definition of why you call this IR brain.
Well, I call it IR because I know that the UV is in the asymptotically at the S region.
How do you know that?
Well, here the space is ADX, basically. So, by the usual.
No, but then you are assuming that the whole thing is consistent, right? So, let's do the experiment, is what I'm trying to say. So, let me take slices. Let me place the sort of probe, infinite number of probe brains, like some kind of tensionless surfaces. And then take the particles that are localized on a job. Now, let's say I am an observer who lives on the. The maximum.
Yeah, okay, fine.
Yeah. And now I want to measure Newtonian interaction between those particles at very large distances. Okay? Now, obviously, I made identical copies of the particles, but because the wave function of the graviton gets suppressed gradually, right?
Ah, but wait a second. So, because the redshift actually goes in the usual way. So the thing is the following. So what you have to keep in mind that usually, so if you look at the scale factor profile, so if you plot A of Y, this looks like this. So it never turns out.
No, but this is precisely what I'm trying to say. So I'm trying to say that there is a discrepancy. There is an inconsistency between this and the fact that graviton wave part. Because let me only look at the graviton. Right? I'm an observer, localized on that part. I only measure Newtonian force.
Okay.
Now we agree that with Newtonian force, this has, what is important is the graviton profile. Right?
Sure, I mean, yeah, this is the Newton constant.
Exactly. So then what I will see is that when I move gradually away from the toward would be UV, I will see that the Newtonian force diminishes between the identical particles, right? Because effectively the graviton wave function diminishes, right?
In this case, it increases.
That way.
Yeah.
Towards what you call UV.
No, I call UV this part.
Exactly,
yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So let's move
towards. Sorry, I'm looking around. Okay, great, yes. Yes, yes.
So now, we agree that the force between the particles diminishes.
Yes.
Now, the only. So this means that they redshift, right? Because the coupling of graviton is the same, it doesn't matter, because it's just uniton, right? Four dimensional graviton coupling is uniton.
Yeah, sure, but I'm not sure what you mean by. So suppose you. So suppose you take two copies of the same thing here, and then I would say that the guy which is redshifted is this guy, because the scale factor means.
Yeah,
increases.
You would, but it's not. That's the whole point. That's what I'm trying to say. You would, yeah, because you would say. If
yeah, you know, I mean, mass here, if you have mass square here, you have n square times a square.
Right. Obviously, that is in contradiction to the measurement that you can do yourself, right? I mean, let me just do the measurement. Right? The graviton profile diminishes. Right. So the interaction between the particle and the graviton is the intersection of their wave functions, right? So now these particles are just delta functions. So obviously, essentially, what you will get, so Newtonian force at large distances will be the essentially that profile at any location y will be that profile times the original masses, right? So this means they redshift somehow, right? And I don't know how. Why should I? So.
Okay, you can also say that. So suppose that this whole extra dimension is smaller than millimeter, right?
Yeah, that doesn't matter. Take it whatever you want. This is completely independent of the size of that extra dimension.
Well, no, but then, I mean, you know that. For dimensional gravity, energies say a scale higher than millimeter will be mediated by the four dimension by the massless guy only. And this massless guy behaves exactly like four dimensional gravity. So suppose now you are stuck on the brain which is here. No matter what.
That's what I'm saying. Look, let's measure the total interaction between the moon and the sun or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Much distance is much larger. So then. In that interaction, what contributes is clearly only that guy, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So now, however, now if, depending where your particles live, the identical copies of your particles, depending where they live, the Newtonian force between them will be different, right? At exactly the same distance. So the only interpretation you can give to it is that their mass is redshift. As we do in Randall-Sundrum, right? That's the same as in Randall-Sundrum.
Yeah, okay.
Right? In the other side, the warping of the space and the profile of the graviton coincide, so therefore there is no mystery. But here, obviously, there is a mystery, because we are saying warming of this measure is fine, but on the other hand, the Newtonian force that I could measure obviously does opposite. It seems that it does opposite. I don't know, maybe I'm confusing stuff.
No, but this means that, okay, so the way I see it, this simply means that you are, after a certain energy, gravity, the gravitational coupling shuts off essentially. So it's like if graviton is composite and composite in the scale is the inverse size of this thing.
No,
once you measure stuff that energy is higher than that.
Nothing, I'm measuring everything. Look, it's an Earth moon distance, right? Has to do nothing with this size of the sex dimension. At that point, the only thing that is operative is this one gravity, one zero of gravity, nothing else.
Right, but the Earth, yeah, but what I'm saying is that the Earth and the Moon are both in the brain that you put them in.
I'm making Earth and the Moon out of those probe guys, okay? That's what I'm trying to say. Forget about what you localize.
Ah, no, but that's. So, but that's a different story, then. No?
Maybe we can allow
the
opinions because.
Well,
yeah,
look, maybe. The whole fun about seminars is fixed,
right? But the reason why it's a little bit counterintuitive is precisely because, as you said, he puts basically this localization by hand by putting a particular, very non generic boundary condition at the singularity. It's really crucial for him to pick up this boundary condition as a singularity.
But my argument, you see, what I'm saying is that's not nothing with how you got there. I'm buying this picture, that's what I'm telling you. Okay? So you somehow got this picture.
Yeah.
Now I'm trying to analyze in this picture who should I call UV and whom should I call IR.
IR is a singularity.
So if IR is a singularity, but let me move, that's what decides my point. So now let's check your statement. Okay? So let me move slightly away from singularity, okay? So that I don't fall that way. Because I agree that if I fall that way, probably I also redshift.
Mm-hmm.
Now I want to fall the other way. Okay? Now, if I fall the other way, if I take this and throw in that direction, right?
Mm-hmm.
You agree that it redshifts. So then, how it is you be if something redshifts? Right? So that's my question. Anyway, sorry.
But yeah, I think that. Yeah, okay.
I have a question. Did you check whether you, if say, you take a. Massless scalar field and put in this background, right? Say the Higgs.
Mm-hmm.
And if it would do the same thing
it would do like
as,
that.
As your graviton profile, or are
you
going
to
do that?
No, say the mass. So
the singularity may develop the same peak as your.
Well,
your
again,
graviton.
That will depend on the boundary conditions you put for this guy in the singularity. So.
See, it's a five dimensional Higgs.
If it's a, yeah.
Yes, my problem is that this Higgs is the particles that are in some way localized, those are not illuminated for this question. Because I want to make a probe which can move in the extra dimension. Because unless I can move, I cannot probe where is RG running, or in which way I run, right? If something is just nailed there, then it's just nailed there. So I'm saying, any probe that you can make that moves, will see that it has to redshift somehow.
Is there a reason you choose this logarithm? Why did you choose it?
No, because it's some. I mean, because it's you can compute stuff analytically. So it's
no,
not.
No, but see, the thing is now once I have this logarithmic singularity, what is the meta stress then that produces this singularity?
Oh, it's you can put an exponential potential, for example.
So it's a normal looking like potential.
Yeah, it's an exponential potential with the normal looking parameter there. Yes, at least it's close to this region. Then there is some transition region in which I don't know what the potential is. I mean, you cannot give any analytic. But yeah, so basically it goes like constant here and goes like exponential here. Yeah.
I don't know, I'm confused, but my interpretation of this is that this sort of unphysical phenomenon that we see is because.
Probably, yeah.
You know, because of the singularity.
Probably, yeah.
So that's what I said, it's incredibly counterintuitive, but that's a boundary condition. You never know what. I mean, this is a very peculiar boundary condition.
So, for example,
what I wanted to add when you said that you can add any sort of boundary condition for the scalar field. It's not true. All these boundary conditions at the singularity are correlated. Otherwise, you can sort of there is an additional consistency condition when you integrate across the singularity and you have, you know. Jumps and scalar fields.
No, absolutely.
But they all have to be correlated.
No, but you mean if you include the back direction of the scalar field on top of the matrix?
Yeah, then.
But I thought you meant if you put a scalar field, like a scalar field on top of this background, which doesn't.
But the scalar field, even if you put a seemingly innocent scalar field, it will also may blow up at the singularity, and its back reaction,
except that in this case it doesn't blow. So these wave functions do not blow up. The scale, if you look at the scalar wave equation. So basically what I wanted to say, if you compute Planck scale, you get something like this. So basically that's what I want. So suppose you compute interaction between two sources that are stuck on this grid at any distance, you will find that the distances below the distances larger than the first Kaluza-Klein mode, it will look like normal gravity with this Newton constant, which depends on where you are.
Of course.
However, if you look at...
But there's not showing you anything about the RG flow.
RG flow is taken from ABS-CFT, essentially.
No, don't need that. So for this case,
we can discuss it.
But for RG flow, you really need to sort it that can cross location and extra dimension. One source which is stuck on one brain and just that is not telling you anything about RG flow. It's just because there's some Newton's constant and
fine. Okay, right. So anyway, we can discuss it. I think you have an idea about. So I'll just skip that. So one way out of this mess could be, for example, that you give up the fact that you want exactly massless states, because nothing prohibits me if I want now light massive spin 2 now to make the space extend all the way to infinity, and not having the singularity problem. But now I have to engineer things in a clever way. It's still going to be fine-tuned because I have to engineer things in a clever way, in such a way that the lowest mode is much lighter than the first
one. You always need, even if you have a massive spin 2 state, you always need a singularity, and you always need similar type of the boundary.
No, this I don't agree.
C1 over C2 is a constant.
So if the space is infinite, then the only condition is normalizability, and then you cannot do anything else. So that's fixed. If y goes off to infinity, there is always, as I showed you, this solution, psi infrared, always goes up at the.
So you don't have normalizable.
Zero mode.
Okay.
Massive mode, you can make it turn around in such a way that it's normal.
But you cannot verify this.
Well, we have some ideas how to do it, but it's not easy because. It's not easy if you want to preserve the positive energy.
I think it's a generic feature. You will not be able to, normalizable
even massive mode. No, massive mode you can get. The problem is to get a mass gap which is phenomenological acceptable. Normalizable massive mode, you have a Schrödinger equation with some potential. You can make the potential look like harmonic oscillator in the infrared and then you get normalizable massive mode. But then you don't get mass gap. No. Even with respecting energy conditions. Yeah, that you can do, at least from this bottom-up approach, so this reverse engineering kind of approach. I mean, you can write down a scale factor that gives you a potential for the graviton, which is like harmonic oscillator in the...
Well, but then you compute, that's what I'm saying, you compute this energy condition for the... You will violate, the signal energy condition.
Okay, that I'm not sure, so we can discuss that, but I'm not sure. I mean, it's not obvious to me that you will get. Anyway, either you can do that, or you can, for example, look for a light spin to resonance. So if you give up the requirement that this mode is normalizable, you can look for a massless resonance. So you can try to mimic, for example, what happens in VGP in this sense. So this also evades this singularity problem. So basically, to conclude, so this is what we've done. So it's up to you if you want to buy it or not. So we look for infinitely localized masses for the gravitons in world asymptotically ABS-phi spacetime. So we've seen that this arises only if the fifth dimension terminates, but we found cases in which there are no other unwanted modes in the spectrum. And also we have some ideas how to relax this requirements in such a way that you can maybe make the model a bit more attractable. So thank you very much.
I have so many questions for Francesca that I think it would be fair if somebody wants to continue the discussion because they hear it otherwise. Interesting.